All right, everyone, on today's episode, we're going to talk about building your talent stack. We're going to look at it through the lens of financial allocation, information allocation, and aggregating information to create for yourself a better life. Welcome to the Ultimate Crowdsourced Personal Finance Show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Guys, really excited to dive into this week's episode. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. Yeah, I hear there's some big news in your family this week, right?
Yes, this is hugely personal and exciting. My wife, who is from Zimbabwe, she has had her green card for several years now, I guess since our marriage, about 5 or 6 years ago. And as of this week, in fact, as of yesterday, when this episode goes live, she will have gotten her citizenship. We are driving up to Chesapeake or driving up to Hampton Roads to the USCIS office, and we are having our swearing in ceremony. And we're really excited, man. Really excited.
Oh, that is amazing. Congrats to Danny. That's wonderful. What a momentous thing, right? It's remarkable.
You know, I feel kind of patriotic right now. Like I could be wearing some red, white, and blue. I'm kind of actually genuinely excited about this. So it's been a crazy year and a crazy couple of years, and there's a lot going on there. But an event like this really helped ground me and remind me, man, this is cool. This is very, very cool. So I'm excited for her. It means a lot for our family. And I just wanted to share that with our audience because I think we had mentioned a while back that this is something that we are going to be pursuing. And as of this week, it's done.
Nice. That is so, so cool.
So I could belabor that and talk about my emotions and my happiness with regards to this event for the whole episode. I'm sure people would hang tight with us, but we actually have a lot to cover today. And I wanted to start the title of this episode, Building Your Talent Stack. We featured Jacques Hopkins, who's a good friend of mine, and how he built a 7-figure online business actually teaching piano. And while it was cool to go behind the scenes and find out how he built the business, I got to say, what he was describing in terms of this epiphany that he had and how hard it was to learn the piano the traditional way really stuck with me. And I went and I signed up for his course and I'm blown away, dude. I'm learning the secrets of playing piano and I've been trying to do this on my own, just beating my head against the wall. And he legitimately is onto something fantastic. And I can clearly see how, you know, within a period of under a month, I will be able to start churning out the songs that I want to play and kind of be that, you know, fun guy that everybody wants to associate with because I know how to play piano.
The life of the party. I like it. No, but seriously, that's just a cool skill, right? Like, I'm curious because clearly he talked about learning piano in 21 days. And for somebody like me who's never played piano for 1 second, like that sounds really, really daunting. And I assume there's some type of learning hack, if you will. And I hate to use that in like a pejorative way, but like, how does he do that? Like, how is that even possible? Because clearly it can't be, I'm starting from this is finger one, this is finger two, if he's teaching you how to play real songs in 21 days, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give away all of his secrets, right? For free. But no, I'm just kidding. I'll totally tell you. It'll actually cement for you that you should go check out his course. So I took 3 to 4 years of piano as a kid. I mean, if you listen to that episode on Monday with Jacques, his story is my story minus the part where I figured it out. I just showed up. I didn't want to practice during the week. They handed me this boring song. I went to this piano teacher every single week. At the end of a year, I could play one boring classical song, went to the recital, screwed it up, kind of got through it, muddled my way to the next one, miserable. Kind of understood technique and finger placement and that sort of thing. Could maybe read a little bit of sheet music, but the sheet music gets progressively more complicated. So while I could feel really confident at level one, dun, 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 you know, once you go to level 2B, now it's two hands, now it's sharps and minors, my frustration levels rose exponentially. And there was just a point I was like, no, I can't do this. I can't do this. And the music was horrible, you know, that they were handing me. So even if I could play it, I got no feedback loop. So my second version of that was as an adult going back, well, maybe I could just go back and learn songs that are actually fun to play. Maybe Disney songs. Maybe I just could do like Disney songs and I could play them with my kids. And I tried to do that. And I was starting to make a little bit of progress. I was leaning into that, trying to, you know, have the enthusiasm and engagement that I never could muster as a kid. But still, I felt like I was bumping up against it. And after talking with Jacques and checking out his webinar and then going to check out his course, basically what he's saying is most of the greatest hits that we all think of, and he can show an actual example of this. There's 30 songs that have all broken the charts, you know, platinums, et cetera, et cetera. They use the same four notes in different arrangements. That's the big secret. And the rhythm and how those notes are arranged and your ability to improvise these chords, you're starting to think about it the way you would play guitar. You're starting to think about it through the lens of chords and rhythm and improv. That allows you to create virtually an unlimited number of tunes. So instead of focusing on music theory, which could get you to a concert hall where you have to be very technical, oh, wow, that's off the rails. You know, where, what is that note? Well, let me count my way up and get that one note. And then you're just frustrated. Instead, you can just focus. He's figured out a few different rules and then an incredible number of ways to add the improv onto that. And you can be churning out your favorite tunes within 21 days. And he shows you in the system. It's crazy. It truly is a secret. And it makes sense. I always knew there were kids that just seemed to have an easier time. They didn't seem to be super worried about nailing that exact note. And here's the secret. On the piano keyboard, you only have like 7 keys, right? I mean, it's 7 major keys and I guess some minor keys, but they're not an unlimited number of keys. And then those keys are repeated, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times, depending on the size of your keyboard. I think there's actually 88 keys on a traditional keyboard. Listen to me, piano players out there. I'm sorry. I know I butchered all those numbers. It's not specifically right. That's the point. I spent 3 years trying to do it exactly right. But what if you could just fake it by understanding these few rules that allow you to create fun, compelling music, and then you can start churning out tunes based on these simple principles? You can do that in 21 days. I was like, oh my goodness, how could you even put a price on this? So yeah, I think my kind of guiding light there is, yes, you could just brute force it and put your head down and suffer for months and months and years until suddenly you figure it out. Or you could just work smarter and get the 80%, you know, the Pareto's principle.
Yeah, that is exactly what I was going to say. That is the 80-20 analysis of that, right? And it's interesting, actually, that, and we're not going to dive into this. I'd love to ask Jacques about this, but like those 30 songs, you're saying like there's only, I guess, 4 chords or 4 notes or whatever that are essentially repeated. And like, that reminds me, to learn that, you're chunking it mentally. Like you're chunking that data and then you're just being able to reuse that, as opposed to your point. Like, obviously people who are really technically adept with piano, like that's extraordinarily difficult. But to your point, you don't need that in order to play these songs that you genuinely get enjoyment from. And I think that's just kind of a cool way to look at, hey, what am I looking to get out of this? I think that's ultimately the question, right? Like, if you're looking to get to Carnegie Hall, clearly you need to know all the technical portions of this. That goes without saying. If you're looking to just get some enjoyment out of the piano and do that fairly rapidly, it sounds like Jacques has hit on something. And I also wanted to kind of talk about something we alluded to just a little bit in passing in that episode, was the concept of teaching and some sense of imposter syndrome. And I thought this was kind of cool. And hopefully it was a rethink for a lot of people out there listening. I know we've talked about this over the years, Jonathan, but it's important to really kind of hone in on, which is, when you're teaching something like this, you don't have to be the world-class expert. You don't have to be the best person at the world in piano in order to be a successful piano teacher. In fact, I would probably argue that precisely because he is not a world-class expert, that's what makes him so relatable and what makes his teaching style better, because he can understand what it's like. He can remember what it's like to be a beginner, because it wasn't all that long ago in terms of technical prowess. Like, from here to there is not that long. And you can remember that, right? And it's similar, Jonathan, in a lot of ways. I know you said you saw a lot of your own story in his, and I saw a lot of my own story in Jacques as well. It's what I did with travel rewards, almost to a T. It's, hey, I am not a world-class expert, but I've distilled hundreds and hundreds of hours of research that I had to do flailing around in the dark. And I've distilled that into something that's easily understandable by people like me. You know, in my case, it was suburban families, right? Like suburban families who want to take one close to free vacation a year. I don't need to be a world-class expert to teach to that person. I just need to be a little more knowledgeable. And while, yes, there was some level of imposter syndrome at the beginning, once I got over that, I realized, no, this is a benefit. This isn't something to look down on. This is a positive in terms of why I relate and why people want to take this course. And it's kind of cool, right, Jonathan? When you go through, I know your own skills. You went from pharmacist to world-class podcaster, and you think about the hundreds and thousands of hours that you spend learning this stuff. And to be able to distill with that beginner's mindset, I think that's the critical thing. If you start talking jargon, and this is relatable to everybody, like if you start talking jargon, nobody wants to listen to you. You sound pompous and it just doesn't work. If you can relate to that person that you were not all that long ago, that's when people, they see, they have that aha moment, and it makes a huge difference.
You are absolutely right, man. You're absolutely nailing it. You know, I think one of the things that we have been trying to gently get people to reframe in their minds is I, in my 30s, with the benefit of lots of hindsight, would no longer pay money for a degree by itself. Now, I'm not saying don't get a degree. That's not, please. This is a very nuanced statement, but I feel very strongly about it. I would not pay just to get a degree. I would pay for skills. I will pay a significant amount of money for skills that in my mind have a significant ROI. And if a degree will get me that, then I'm okay paying for that degree. But I will not just pay to have extra letters after my name anymore. I feel so strongly about that. And if I were to take this mindset and apply it to the younger version of myself, you know, kind of help my kids think through it the same way. I was so focused on the degree that I deferred building all of my skills until after I got the degree. What did that cost me? That degree cost me $168,000 plus the interest that came along with it. It cost me 12 years. And then at the end of that, now you're saying, well, do I like this job? You know, and then you're, if the answer is no, which at some point it became, then it's like, well, maybe I should start building some new skills. Does everybody see how crazy that is? When someone is paying you money, they are not paying you for your degree. They're not. Now at some level, a historical model, you could maybe make a compelling case that they were, but they weren't paying you for very long for your degree. They were paying you based on the skills that you possessed. And in the old model, which may have been a true model up through the early 2000s, maybe even through 2010, for a lot of careers, that degree was a gatekeeper that prevented you from someone giving you the chance to demo your skills. That may have been accurate. It's not anymore. It's just simply not. And if that is, I already feel strongly about that now, that will be even more accentuated 5 years, 10 years from now. There will still be people that get degrees. It's not telling you don't get it, but you need to be ruthlessly looking through it through the lens of what are the skills that this degree is going to provide. Colleges that are still here versus not here are the ones that are able to ruthlessly demonstrate that value, the skills that they provide, and match that out. You paying a 2-to-1 ratio. Listen to me, those student loan forgiveness programs, they start to make sense when you have 2-to-1 debt to income ratio. You took out $80,000 for a job that pays 40, go sign up for student loan forgiveness. All of those degrees are going to go away. Those paid degrees, they won't be there. It's not competitive. Anyone that signs up is committing financial bankruptcy. I mean, you're locking yourself in. People that say, but the college experience, that's hilarious. I remember when there were rotary phones. You know, that's an old model. It's not going to exist. It doesn't exist now. It's an illusion. It's fading away quickly. And for the next generation, it'll be even less so. And so not everybody will agree with me. Some people will have an incentive to disagree with me. Some people will just have their heartstrings pulling for this old world where the college experience really meant something. That's fine. But I'm telling you, the future will bear me out on this. And those of you that realize that and realize the way you're going to earn revenue for the self, the way that you're going to reach financial independence is going to be based on your talent stack, on the skills that you possess. That's been our focus, dude. That's how we go about aggregating information. What's the information you wish you had had when you were starting from scratch? And I could have gotten 12 years back, you know, with the information that we have now.
And Jonathan, you mentioned building your talent stack. And I wanted to really dial in on this because this is something that we've kind of woven throughout the 3.5+ years here at Chooseify. And it's actually something that I picked up from the author, Scott Adams. He wrote the book, How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. And really just a wonderful, wonderful book about systems versus goals and just an entire mindset of success, basically. And he talked about this talent stack. And what he said was, and I really took this to heart. He basically said, most people are not going to be world-class at any singular thing. I mean, that's extraordinarily difficult. But if you have that as the barometer of success, then you're almost invariably going to be disappointed. So let's throw that out. Let's look at where you have skills of various types that you're just extremely above average at. Again, you don't have to be world-class, just even top 15, 20, 25%, you know, just the top quartile or something. If you have a variety of skills from different areas of your life, it enables your brain to put things together that it otherwise wouldn't. And it enables you then to have a skill set that is extremely unusual. Maybe you're the only person in the world that has that unique skill set. So it speaks to building this set of skills. And we'll talk about this later, Jonathan, I'm sure. But going back to that travel rewards, I used my talent stack of being a somewhat above mediocre CPA and also a somewhat, though slightly above mediocre website creator, and put those two things together along with this understanding of travel rewards. And I was able to build an online business from something where I got very little website traffic, but I was able to put those three things together and actually offer free coaching, knowing that I could look at the lifetime value of customer, which was my accountant's hat on, and try to build a business from that. We don't want to belabor this now, but that was my example of taking a talent stack of three really diverse travel rewards, building websites, and accounting, and turning it into something, right? Like that's as bizarre of a talent stack as you can imagine, and turning it into something that ultimately became pretty to very successful.
Yeah, I'd love our audience to check it out too. I know in the past we've mentioned it, but Brad worked with Ed to take that whole class to a whole nother level. And if our audience is interested in kind of finding out more about, well, what does one or two free trips a year look like to a destination of my choice? It is a free course still. So you can go to chooseofi.com/travel for more information. But you're right, dude. And I think we can see the same thing with Jacques. You have an analytical mind. You have someone that can play piano at an above average level that's figured something out that doesn't feel like a lot of other people are talking about, and then has a love of teaching, and then starts to build out a few other skills. Well, what does it look like to do screen tutorials? How do I build a website? And each one of these are questions that sends you down a rabbit hole, but he is not the greatest piano player of all time. He is not the greatest website builder of all time. He is not like, but it doesn't matter. And you shouldn't wait until you are to get started, because, you know, he started in 2013. Now he is. Like, now he has become, in 2013, he was just a guy trying something. And 2020, he's the guy that's had over 5,000 students go through his course. He's iterated his course 5 times. It has become the premier, preeminent, best online piano class that teaches you the skills you want to know in the shortest imaginable point of time. It's easy, it's accessible, and it is available. And that's the sort of thing, instead of us saying, well, you can't do that. You got a degree in pharmacy, Jonathan. You can't be a podcaster. Come on, the last 12 years, don't you know? Well, what would it look like if I could? Where would I start? You know, that's the sort of thing. And we just give ourselves permission to ask the question. And there's no downside. When you're horrible at something and you're just getting started, nobody even knows. You know, you're just practicing in the dark. And now at some point, by the time you do have your skills underneath you, you have started to build something really remarkable. And I think what we're speaking to is, it's not just like a talent stack in the scheme of building an online business necessarily, like what you just described, but it's really, what are the skills that you're bringing into your wheelhouse? What is the information that you're starting to accumulate? And MK, I'm going to bring you into this conversation, because I know this is actually something that you were talking about with us offline. But I think a lot of us on the show, we put a lot of emphasis on our finances. And I know you and your husband, Jason, you guys have had a lot of conversation about building a more comprehensive, I don't know, what do you call it? A more comprehensive information base.
Absolutely. Yes. So we're super nerdy. And every Friday we have our weekly discussions. It started out to help me with my author business to make sure I was doing what I needed to do. And it kind of evolved into these life discussions. We have these larger life goals beyond FI, beyond just the financial. How are we going to reach those? And we were talking last week and how saying, you know, we looked at our asset allocation. When we first found out about FI, when we were first learning, going down all the rabbit holes, reading all the blogs, we were very focused on the asset allocation. And now that's something we maybe look at once a quarter, maybe monthly if there's been a lot of, you know, changes in the market. But for the most part, that's set. But what does change and what we do analyze often is what we're calling our information allocation, right? So we think of asset allocation, that's stocks, bonds, real estate, other investment types. So for our information allocation, we're looking at, well, what are the podcasts we're listening to? What are the books we're reading? What are the conversations we're having? What's the news media we're taking in or maybe not taking in, because that's a little stressful sometimes. So really starting to look at that, and even looking at my own journey, you know, hearing about each of your journeys is so inspiring. But 5 years ago, I had a book written and I had no clue how to publish it. Fast forward to today, I'm about to release my 8th book. Mm. And a lot of that happened, yay, because I changed my information allocation. I went from just saying, I can't figure this out, to consuming everything I could, and then using it for myself, learning from the mistakes I made the first time and the second time, and getting better every iteration. And that's from that change in the what I'm calling the information allocation. Because at first I looked at, how do I do this for myself? And then you guys came to me with this crazy idea of, we're going to put out a book. How do we do that? And I was like, how do I do this for somebody else? Change my information allocation again. And it'll be changing very rapidly here in the future as I have to figure out basic newborn child development and learning everything I can there to be a great mom and caretaker. So it's going to be very interesting just to see how that changes. And I think that's something we've done well here on this show, is that we're not just talking about the basics. You guys could have said at the outset, this is just for basic personal finance, the basics of financial independence. But every week we talk about such varied topics. I think if somebody just took a snapshot of these topics, they might be like, what is this show about? But when you look at it comprehensively, it's like, wow, this is all the different topics you need to build this optimized life. And it's not always going to be on the same level every week. It's not going to be this gradual thing. It's going to meet you where you are, hopefully, in that moment. And then you can adjust the other information you go and research from there, or listen to our guests from there, or read their books from there. So that's our new buzzword in the Williams household, is our information allocation.
That's really, really cool. And yeah, I love that you talked about optimized life, because I think that's what we're talking about here with this talent stacking, with this information allocation. We are really going back to the basics of learning how to learn, right? I mean, that's what a lot of this is. We're realizing there's finite time, there's finite attention, there's finite brain space, frankly. Like, this goes back to the 80-20 that we were talking about with Jacques, right? It's, okay, there are things that I want to learn, and how do I best go about doing this? And I think that's kind of a cool way. So, like, even just the sheer, like, learning how to learn or discerning what information is good and isn't, that's a critical, critical life skill. Decision-making, that's something that I've been focusing on a lot lately with some of the books that I've been reading about poker, actually. I'm not like a major poker player by any means, but I do credit some of my like dabbling in poker back in like the early 2000s with kind of learning how to think better, learning how to make decisions better. And this has nothing to do with money at all. It has nothing to do with betting or gambling or any of that other nonsense. It has to do with, how do you make decisions with imperfect information, which is life. That is truly life. We are making the best decisions we can with information constantly coming in, with imperfect information. And we try to do the best we can. And then we assess and maybe change our minds based on new information, right? Like, this is how you look at life. This is how you should look at life. If you're ever that certain about something that you're unwilling to even contemplate change, there's probably something slightly awry with your decision-making process, in my opinion. So I think just looking at poker, and a book that I'm reading this week is called The Biggest Bluff by Maria Konnikova. And I've read, Jonathan, you and I both read Thinking in Bets by Annie Duke. And she actually has another book coming out specifically on decision-making. So this is kind of where my thought process has been recently.
I'm glad you pointed that out, MK. I think we've tried to be intentional about it while somehow loosely keeping it under this continuum of, you know why you're here. If someone were just here to learn how to save more money and they were solely focused on that, I think after a few episodes, they'd probably be irritated with us because we don't just stay in that lane. I think for me personally, as a show that I want to be a part of for a decade or more, that would be boring if I just stayed there, because I'm interested in not just how to save more. I'm interested in way more than that. I'm interested in what does it look like to build a better life? You know, using what other people have figured out and then taking action on those ideas, testing them. What does it look like to build a better life? And I'd love to just have this thought experiment out loud, because if the person was just listening to our show saying, how can I frugalize more? They would get a lot of, you know, great value from this show on certain episodes, but we've kind of gone outside of that. So we've talked about financial resilience. So if your finances are a metaphorical dumpster fire, how to clean that up. And, you know, once you're past that point, maybe your net worth is approaching zero again and going into the positive, you know, what is the path from there to financial independence? If you want to learn how to take different line items in your budget that are really expensive, like transportation, like travel, like housing, and you learn how to crush those, then we certainly have talked about that. If you want to look at your food budget and figure out how to crush your food and grocery budget, we've talked about that. But it doesn't stop there. Then we talk about, you know, college, how to optimize the cost of college, health. What's the intersection of fitness and finance? How to get in the best shape of your life? How to optimize your time, productivity, relationships? How to get your spouse on board? Networking. Wow, how powerful is it? You know, this past week or a couple weeks ago when we did this episode on networking, how powerful is it to have that in your talent stack? Entrepreneurship. How to start identifying what skills you want to start stacking on. And you can see how, like, if you do from a holistic place, say, I'm open. I want to build a better life. And I'm just going to trust you guys to curate what you're most excited about and bring that to this platform a couple times a week, because I'm willing to take action on those ideas. I'm not going to do everything you guys talk about, but I'm going to do some of it. I'm going to do what appeals to me. You know, if that's the mindset that you come to the show with, I feel that we could do some sort of triple bottom guarantee. You're going to be in a better place. Like, your life is going to be better as a result of taking action on these ideas. We're not saying every idea on the planet is going to show up on this show. There is some level of curation and saying, look, that's a sketch. Like, I don't want to vouch for that. So I'm not going to talk about that idea. You can go look at that on your own. But these are the ideas that we think stand the test of time. And we can look back months and years from now without regret and say, you do this, you're going to be sending me a thank you note, maybe a cup of coffee. All right, well, let's go ahead and switch gears. And I think, MK, we'll start with you, just because last week, I believe we announced that the kids and youthpreneurs, is that the phrase that we use? Anyways, last week we announced that they were going to be getting market feedback and starting to list and post their first sale. These are all kids that enrolled in the Digital Entrepreneur Summer Camp, the Simple Startup. It was two events and they both sold out, which was amazing. But now those kids, as a part of going through that course, have a product for sale, and they were starting to get feedback and research. So catch us up. What's going on?
Well, we had the first sale come through from our first camp. So very exciting. So obviously the students came in with different levels of already having an idea, saying, I want to do this, you know, where do I start? Or my parents made me do this. I guess I'm learning. But we have our very first sale that came in this past week from Nev. So she said, I made my first few sales yesterday. Most were to close friends and cousins, but one was to someone at my school whom I hardly know. So it was pretty exciting. My Instagram page just passed 100 followers, which is also a big milestone. So she was really excited to share this. And I can share that excitement, you know, like that first time you're like, somebody bought this and yeah. I don't know who they are. It's like, that's the first real sale. And I know that from selling books, you know, the first few, I was like, well, that was my mom and my husband. Yep. Oh, somebody bought, I have no clue who it is. I really made a sale. So we're very excited to share Nev's success. And obviously all the other businesses that are being started from this, we're so excited. And we hope this really carries them through these skills they're learning, but maybe these businesses last, and you know, you never know what could happen.
That is incredible. Huge congrats on the first sale. And yeah, I mean, that first sale is truly the time when you realize, wow, I've got something on my hands here. Like, this could be real. I mean, Jonathan, you've talked about that, right? With like your first X number of pennies that you made on something online.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously that's slightly different. But man, once you realize, wow, this is truly a business model that works, then somewhere deep down, you start believing that you can make it a success. Right? Until you get that first one, it's all well and good to have an idea. It's all well and good to take action. But somehow, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's my own limiting belief. But like, that belief that this is real comes when you get that first sale. So again, a huge, huge congrats.
We've also got a couple emails for some parents whose kids were enrolled in this program, and I was blown away by the feedback on what they're giving. And this is a huge compliment to Rob, who's running these events with a lot of love. It's he's putting everything into this, and they were just saying, I wasn't sure exactly what to expect because this is a virtual experience, and I wasn't sure whether or not it would be able to keep my kids' engagement. It's just perfect. For this season of life that we're in the absence of what's going on, this is the best possible experience that I can imagine, and my kids are lighting up, and this so anyways, I saw that feedback, and I'm sure we'll find a way to share some more of those for parents that are thinking about doing this again next year. But this is the real deal, and just very cool. And huge thanks to Rob for putting all this, you know, energy and time and commitment into these aspiring entrepreneurs and now increasingly real entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And of course, for anybody, obviously, if you missed out on this summer camp, you can still buy the book, The Simple Startup. So just go to thesimplestartup.com. And yeah, the workbook is amazing. I know I've talked on prior episodes about how I've been going through this with my daughters, Anna and Molly. So yeah, again, if you missed out on it, you did not miss out entirely here, not by a long shot. So thesimplestartup.com.
Now, speaking of changing seasons, I think we should spend just a minute and go back to the archives and talk about the Red X Month and what that means for our podcast and community. So, Brad, why don't we start with you? Describe what the Red X Month is and how you're leveraging it.
Yeah, Jonathan, this goes way, way, way back to Vincent Puglisi's first appearance here on Choose FI. And he talked about looking at a calendar and taking a red pen and just putting a big red X through an entire month, or in his case, potentially series of months. And this was something that I know you and I, like, we just looked at each other and we're like, that is a life goal, right? Like that's the way it should be done. So I, for the last, I guess this is my third year in a row, we have as a family determined that August is our red X month. So, I mean, there is nothing on the schedule for August. It is, let's go on vacation. Let's spend time as a family. Let's go to the pool. Let's do whatever. But we're not doing any work this month. We are just enjoying this as a family. And yeah, obviously, we did have plans for big travel this year, and clearly COVID got in the way. So unfortunately, we were not able to do our trip to Vancouver and our cruise to Alaska and, you know, 10 days in Anchorage. That all got canceled, unfortunately. But the Red X Month is in full effect. So I just could not be more excited.
Awesome. All right. So just to our audience, spoiler, the show is not going anywhere. We are still going to have a show available. But if you guys remember at the beginning of COVID, we increased the cadence to 5 days a week, and then we slowed it down to 3 days a week. And then now with the Red X Month coming and our schedules kind of changing, we are going to go back to our normal amount of 2 days a week. So that's going to be starting next week. So we will be on your smart device of choice every Monday and Friday going forward. We have been working our tails off to get some incredible content teed up for you. So you can send us a congratulations on Facebook and say, guys, enjoying the show, enjoy your vacation. We'll see you in September in real time. That's kind of the plan there. But thank you so much for being with us this entire time. And let me just kind of put you on this challenge. What would it look like in the somewhat near future for you to have a Red X Month carved out for yourself? So if up to this point, you know, you've just been focused on trying to do whatever you were doing faster, probably you're not going to immediately start with a Red X Month now. But I think this is an aspirational goal. As you get farther on the path to financial independence, as you start building this skill stack, you are going to start to be able to create opportunities for yourself. You're going to create space, margin, bandwidth for yourself. And I tell you, selfishly, as soon as I realized that that was possible, one of the things I started focusing on is what would the Red X Month look like? And I haven't quite made it to 30 days yet. I haven't quite been able to get there, but I'm at 3 weeks. And that was starting with, if you go back to my corporate life not so long ago, I was lucky to get 10 days. 10 days is, if I get 10 days off in a row, like I had to pull in some serious favors. Now we can start with this and we can work our way backwards. It's really, you know, opportunities do abound, and this is a continuum, right? So I think the Red X Month is kind of it may be an aspirational goal, but you could look back with the benefit of hindsight and in not too distant future and say, yep, nailed it. And then let us know, send us a message, feedback@choosefi.com. Let us know what you did with your first Red X Month. All right, now let's go ahead and dip into the mailbag and see what the community is saying. MK, what do you got for us?
Great. So this week we have a question from Brian, and it's actually about managing asset allocation across platforms. So kind of tied that one in there. He says, in regards to asset allocation across platforms like your Work 401k, Vanguard, M1 Finance, if you try to look at your total asset allocation globally across all the platforms, or are you more concerned about your mix of assets within each platform because they may vary based on the products available? So I think he was directing this as a personal question to both Brad and Jonathan here, but I think ultimately the answer is it's very personal. You know, some people may just have everything in their Work 401k. Some people may have, you know, the M1 Finance account, and they may have things also captured in Personal Capital, or they may have a lot of real estate, and you kind of can't capture your real estate holdings in one of these platforms. So Jason and I are pretty old school. We do Excel.
I've seen Jason's Excel sheets. That dude takes Excel to a whole nother level.
Not exactly.
Macros are easy to learn.
Every time I try to enable a macro, my Windows computer suggests to me that it would be a bad idea.
Oh, man. But yeah, so that is a very good point, MK, that it is hard when you're looking at it just platform by platform to see the bigger picture. And I think, you know, we've talked about Personal Capital as a way to kind of aggregate everything. I also am old school, no surprise there, and use Excel as well. But I think to Brian's question, when I personally, and again, I think we're all going to answer this personally, when I personally think of asset allocations, I do think in terms of holistically. So across all of the platforms that I have, where are my assets split? So if it's total stock market index fund, if it's bonds, if it's cash, if it's real estate, I don't just look at my 401k and say, oh, I want that to be 75-25 and then this other account to be X percent. I put it all together. And again, I personally do that in Excel because I'm kind of a dinosaur, but it works, right? Like I have everything listed out. Though, to my great credit, I created a Google spreadsheet, which actually pulls in like real-time data, which is cool.
What? Who are you right now? You and your technology and your talent stacking.
I know. Who knew, right? There's this actually really cool little Google Finance lookup that you can do. I'm actually pulling it up right now. So it's just equals Google Finance, open parentheses. Then it's like quotation, the stock ticker. So VTSAX, close quotation, comma, open quotation, price, close quotation, and then just close the parentheses. I know that sounds like a lot, but
this
it's super
segment
easy.
Was just made for podcast.
Oh goodness, I tried so hard.
No, you did great. So you did great. I mean, maybe we could just make do a little screenshot of the formula and throw it in the show notes or something.
Yes, we will definitely put that in show notes. It's the easiest for if I can do it, anybody can do it, and it pulls in everything. So I just have in this case, and again, I probably should just be using Personal Capital for this. That would be what a smart person would do. But I actually kind of enjoyed creating the spreadsheet. So it's really neat that it updates it every 20 minutes when the stock market's open, and it just kind of populates everything. And you see, this is what I have in this type of assets. This is what I have in those assets, et cetera. And it, you know, it's very cool to look at your entire net worth holistically like that. So that would be my short answer to Brian's question.
Yeah, and don't move on from there. I am actually curious in the details of how that might actually work. So what I understand you're saying is Google Finance is not actually linked to your bank accounts. You've just created a simple table where it sounds like you probably are telling it how many shares you have, even if it's a fractional number, and then what your base is or your average share price is, something like that. And then it from there is then checking the actual ticker value at any given point and telling you how that has adjusted. Then it sounds like, I believe you would need to update this when you make additional purchases. Is that accurate?
Jonathan. It's like you're reading my mind. That is exactly it. Yeah, I went in and just brute forced it. I logged into Vanguard, Schwab, Fidelity, wherever I have money, and just wrote down the number of shares. Yep. And like you said, down to the fraction. Then it's just a simple multiplication of the number of shares times the share price at that moment. That happens then automatically going forward. And then, yes, clearly anytime you make purchases or even like if there are dividends that are you're repurchasing shares, et cetera, it does slightly alter it. So again, this is not the optimal scenario by any means.
Jason is going to get back to you with the optimal version, I bet. Yeah, as is William. Yeah. You're going to get two messages for someone suggesting. You're going to be like, don't message me, guys. It's just fine. I got it.
I'm doing it. I'm so proud of myself. Here's the thing. Like, I am perfectly content with this ultra low tech, admittedly terrible solution. So, like, guys, I really don't need the emails, truly. But...
I don't want to be better. Just leave me alone.
No, I do want to be better. I just like it.
No, I hear you though, dude. And I agree with you. I mean, you were saying this is the easiest formula imaginable. Most of my calculations just come down to equals sum parentheses end parentheses or equals average parentheses end parentheses. That's my idea of the simplest formula imagined. That's kind of where I stop. But I hear you and respect that. So since we're all doing personal takes on this, I do use personal capital as much as possible. If I had real estate holdings, which I'm telling you guys, I just can't take action on this. I know I need to. I know I want to. I want it for the purposes of being able to talk through it. I just got too much going on, and I'm happy in my little lane at this moment. It'll happen eventually, and I'll love to document it for you. But if I had real estate, that would be a problem, unless I was using something like maybe like Fundrise. Brad, could you bring Fundrise into personal capital just from your experience? I'm not sure about that.
That is a good question. I have never actually tried. I suspect they have link ups with a lot of these online crowdsourcing real estate companies, but I do not know the answer to that, okay. John.
Well, you know, my life is relatively simple, but I am on multiple platforms. I'm on Fidelity, I'm on Schwab, I'm on Vanguard, I'm on M1 Finance. I have some cash in the bank. So I have like three or four different places that the money is. And I'm very happy just getting it all in personal capital and check it once a quarter. You know, once one of the thing I did just for a little bit there, M1, you can't get all of your accounts inside of M1 unless you transfer your money over, but you can get M1 inside of personal capital. So that's just a little tip that's pretty cool. And then also for some individuals, I went to investing.com and set up just a free account there, and you can just map out it's the exact same thing that you did, Brad, with your Google formula. You go to investing.com, create your portfolio. This isn't real money. You're just telling it. You're giving it some information, your number of shares, your average share price, pretty easy to access that. And then it is then tracking the ticker price on all of those and doing that in real time. So I've done a little bit of that, but I use that not so much to look at my whole portfolio holistically. I definitely keep that information. That's just happening in personal capital. And then the other thing I would say, and I haven't done this, but if I were to go back to what when Frank was on our show, maybe Brad, you can look up that episode number. He was saying that once you have an aggregate, you know, where like, and I don't have a million different accounts and I don't have a million different holdings. I'm largely in index funds. So, you know, we're talking about 5 or 6, 10 different funds total. It's a relatively simple portfolio. And obviously you guys know I'm heavily weighted towards stocks, extremely weighted towards stocks. So even simpler, but assuming I was farther on this path and I was looking at maybe like a drawdown and I was maybe getting more conservative, having some more stuff in bonds, and I wanted to see what my asset allocation holistically would look like in certain scenarios. Frank mentioned portfoliochartsdotcom? And it's in the episode, so we can have that in the show notes. But there are several different links that you can use where you can take your holdings and you can go find out how these would handle, you know, Monte Carlo simulations, et cetera. CFireSim, I believe, was another one that was out there. So just a couple resources available. Frank really dove into detail. Brad, do you have that episode?
Yeah, it was episode 194. So just go to choositby.com/194 and it'll take you to the show notes and all those links will be there.
So episode 194 for Frank. Also, the other resources we mentioned, so personal capital. We do have a short code for that. Very easy if you want to check that out. This is a totally free tool. I don't know why or how it's still free, but it is. Go to choosify.com/PC if you're interested in setting up your free account. Honestly, guys, it's been around for a while. It is the ultimate free net worth tracker on the internet. There is no reason not to use it. And then the other one, you've heard about me rave about it over and over again. Go to choosify.com/M1. M as in Mary 1, M as in Money 1, you know, go to choosify.com/M1. We've created a tutorial there that has, I mean, I just share with you all the different reasons. This is the future of investing and you should go check it out. Okay. That was our mailbag question. MK, what about frugal wins of the week?
Well, we have a frugal win this week from Lindsay, who wrote in and she said, I have the United Explorer credit card, which has a $95 annual fee. I paid the fee in February. Recently, I realized I'm not getting any of the benefits the card offers. I called and was able to keep my card open, but with a lower level of benefits and no annual fee, and they refunded half of the $95 fee. So congratulations, Lindsay, getting some savings back there.
Yeah, I think everything's a value proposition. And if the expected value wasn't what you thought it was going to be going into it, maybe ask the provider if they can rectify that. All of us are adapting. All of us are adjusting. And the worst they can say is no, in which case you have to then make a choice. And they're aware of that. So they're going to want to do right by you. I love that. And thanks for sharing that with the audience, Lindsay. All right, everyone, this week, your challenge, and I want you to go ahead and say challenge accepted before I even tell you. Your challenge is to start thinking through your information allocation, specifically, what would it look like to build your talent stack? What has your focus been on for the first half of your life? Have you started thinking about life through the lens of the more skills I build and the more I can identify those, the more opportunities open up to me? So just come up with a list. You don't need to do anything with this list right now. You just want to start mapping out, what am I good at? What am I above average at? Let's create that list. And if you look at it and you have one line item, that's fine. You have that information. Let's start building it from there. Ask yourself, well, what do I want to work on next? Then do that. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. You've got this. This is a fun journey, and it's all about getting 1% better. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.